3:30.
Okay. We're going to open the Senate Education Committee. Today is, what is today? June 6th. We're going to have an informational meeting, and I'm going to open that informational hearing with Dr. James Braw. And we'll invite you up to the center to explain this. And I'm thank you for this. We've had a lot of information around our districts, and in particular here in Salem, that we're having an eclipse coming. And I thought it might be nice to get a little information about what we're really going to be looking at and where we're going to go from here. And hopefully this can be an educational stuff that other people can come back and look at the record that we have and maybe get some more information for people around the region. So thank you for being here.
Right. Well, thank you, Chair Roblin, and Vice Chair Lithicum, and members, Senator Gelzer. My name is James Braw. Please call me Jim. I'm the Philip H. Knight Professor of Natural Science at the University of Oregon and past director of the Center for High Energy Physics. I've taught astronomy at U of O for nearly 30 years. I have an active research program at U of O involving the Large Hadron Collider in Europe and the LIGO gravitational wave facilities in Washington and Louisiana. We participated in the discoveries of the Higgs boson and the direct detection of gravitational waves, two of the most significant discoveries of the 21st century. I'm now serving as Associate Director of the Global Collaboration working toward the next collider physics project known as the International Linear Collider. Today, I'm here to talk to you about the great solar eclipse of 2017, which will pass through the state of Oregon on August 21st. So here's a trajectory that shows you the path of the totality, where the people will actually observe complete blockout of the sun. This is the first total solar eclipse in North America since 1979. Now, there are several, astronomers think of several phases of the eclipse. There's the first contact, which will occur in Salem at 9:05 a.m. on August 21st. Then there's the second contact, which is a little over an hour later, and that begins the total eclipse. At 10:18, we have totality, and at 10:19, the total eclipse will be over, and then the partial eclipse will end at 11:37 in Salem. So we have 2 minutes, roughly 2 minutes, of totality here in Oregon. Now here's an image that shows how the total eclipse will pass through Oregon. The darker region is where there's totality. Outside of that region, you have partial eclipse. So already throughout the state, one will be observing a partial eclipse, but the totality will move across the state as shown here. You can see the shape of that object that's the eclipse is actually not circular or even elliptical. It's a true representation of defects on this, you know, basically the shape of the moon, which has been done by this NASA visualizer, Ernie Wright. So we have three different types of solar eclipses that occur. A total eclipse, like we're going to have. An annular eclipse, where the moon actually doesn't block out the entire sun. It leaves a ring of light around the sun as it passes through it. And a partial eclipse, where you never reach totality. Of course, on August 21st, we will be seeing a total eclipse. This shows you the trajectories of total eclipses across North America during the 20th century. So this gives you an idea of how rare they are, how infrequently they actually come through Oregon. That's 100 years of total eclipses. And I went back 150 years to find the trajectories of total eclipses through Oregon. And here are the ones that actually struck the state. The first two there in 1860 and 1889 actually just barely clipped the state. One just kind of passes through Astoria, the first one there. And then in the 20th century, we had 1918, 1979, and then now we're going to have the 2017 eclipse. Now, I thought you might find it interesting what happened for the 1918 eclipse. This was the last total solar eclipse that crossed the U.S. from the Pacific to the Atlantic 99 years ago. The Congress made a special appropriation of $3,500 for the U.S. Naval Observatory to observe and study this eclipse. I went to a website to try to figure out, you know, how much spending power does $3,500 have? And it turns out if you actually talk about economic power, which is what you can actually achieve, because, you know, if you just look at how much a loaf of bread costs, that's not really the same as economic power. This website claims that that's almost $1 million. So this is a very serious effort the U.S. government mounted. And after considering many sites, the Naval Observatory chose Baker City, Oregon. They said the good weather in Oregon was a factor. Now, it seems a little strange that Oregon would be characterized as having good weather, but it turns out if you go farther east, there's a lot of humidity and observing is more difficult. The higher altitude of the sun was a factor, because where the sun is in the sky, if it's up higher when the eclipse occurs, just coincidentally, that's good for observing. And then it turned out in Baker City, the duration of totality was long. So they set this up outside of Baker City, and they made a report to the observatory about this event. Here you see the team that assembled over a course of a few months, came together and put things together, shipped stuff out from the East Coast. There's a picture of Baker City in 1918. And just for amusement, I thought I'd read you a portion of their report. If I can, I can't hardly see it from where I am, but I'll try to read this. On the morning of June 8th, the sky was entirely overcast. The limb of the sun could just be seen with the equatorial. About noon, it began to clear somewhat. At the time of the first contact, there was a thin cloud over the sun, but the contact was easily observed. So that's the beginning of that eclipse that we talked about earlier. As totality approached, there were clear patches of sky near the sun, and the clouds were moving in such a way that it seemed certain that the sun would be in a clear space during totality. This expectation was not realized, however, as a light cloud covered the sun during totality. 5 minutes afterward, the sun was in clear space. The scene was very steady, and the photographs, while they do not show the fainter and out extensions of the corona, which we're hoping to see on August 21st, give fine representations of the inner corona and prominences. So you see, even if you expect to have good weather, you may not be lucky. We hope we'll be better, more fortunate this time. So just for interest, here's a representation of the path of the 2017 eclipse, which we're about to see, where it enters the country in Oregon and leaves in South Carolina, and that 1918 eclipse, which also crossed the country and is the last one that actually crossed the country. This animation will show how the eclipse will move across the country, and you'll see a number of representations of the sun there around the country. What it's showing you is how the sun will appear it's roughly an hour and a half that it takes for the total eclipse to go from one coast to the other. So you see that big black spot is the total eclipse. It's coming through Oregon now, and we've got totality, and then we go back to a partial eclipse. And the rest of the country is picking up the totality after Oregon is now in a partial eclipse. This shows you the anatomy of a solar eclipse. This is a very distorted representation, but basically the moon there is blocking out the sunlight in that very dark region. And that region is called the umbra. And if you're in the shadow of that very dark region, you'll see a total eclipse. If you're in the grayer region, you'll see a partial eclipse. When you do have a total eclipse, as we will experience, there are a number of different things that you can observe in the sun at that 2 minutes that you'll have. So, you know, be prepared and be ready for those 2 minutes. One is the corona, which stretches out beyond the sun. Sometimes there's this diamond ring effect that shows up at the edge due to the various irregularities on the surface of the moon and how the light is being propagated through those irregularities. And then there could be a series of little things called Bailey's beads. Now, the moon's orbit around the Earth is inclined at an angle of just over 5 degrees to the plane of the Earth's orbit around the sun. This is an important factor that we need to understand what goes on. By the way, if you have any questions along the way, please do not stop. Do hesitate to interrupt me. So here's another representation that shows that inclined orbit of the moon as the Earth is going around the sun. And this raises the question and brings us to the answer of why we don't have a solar eclipse every month. And the reason is that, and here's another animation that shows the moon in orbit around the Earth and the Earth in orbit around the sun. And as we start this animation, in the upper portion you can see the sun is blocked out by the moon. That's a representation of what we would see on Earth, just below the title of this slide. And I'll turn this on and you'll see the Earth go around the orbit of the sun and the moon orbiting the Earth. And what will happen is, for many of those orbits of the moon around the Earth, the moon will not pass in front of the sun. And you'll see that here. There goes the moon. It missed. Now, in this case, the way this is lined up, we're about to have another total eclipse. But you can see why this is a rare event. The alignment of the two orbits are off by 5 degrees, and so only when everything gets lined up properly do we have one of these eclipses occurring. So there's another image of that showing that 5-degree angle. So we can have a case that's shown in this here where the moon is above, the shadow of the moon is above the Earth, and so there's no blockage of the sun's rays on the Earth. Or we can have a situation like this where the shadow of the moon is actually striking the Earth, and we can get an eclipse in that case under the region where that umbra appears on the Earth. Now, one of the questions that comes up in curiosity is, how frequently does the moon align for the solar eclipse? And here's a table that was done. You can see a number of different cities around the country. Unfortunately, Oregon is not represented here, but we have Seattle, I believe, San Francisco. And what's shown here is the most recent eclipse, total eclipse, and the next expected total eclipse based on our understanding of the orbits, which are pretty confident, and what the time is between these. And you can see that it's several centuries between events, generally speaking, several centuries. Well, Baker City is going to have one century because this eclipse is going to actually go through Baker City as well in eastern Oregon. Most calendar years have two solar eclipses somewhere on the Earth. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean in the United States, and usually isn't. The maximum number of solar eclipses that can take place in the same year is 5, but this is rare. According to NASA calculations, only about 25 years in the past 5,000 years have had 5 solar eclipses. The last time this happened was in 1935, and the next time will be in 2206. So we've already kind of mentioned the fact that we have to be very careful when we view the eclipse. You all have your special glasses. It's not safe to view the eclipse directly during partiality. That's shown here where the sunlight is only partially blocked by the moon. There's an enormous amount of radiation there, and you can quickly damage your eyesight in an irrecoverable way. So during partiality, special glasses rated for solar viewing should be used. These are not just your regular old sunglasses. Those are just going to reduce a fraction of the light, not enough, not at all enough. And as you've already observed by testing out your glasses, these things really block out a very large fraction of the sunlight. So during the partial eclipse, these are fine. You can then observe things. Now, it is safe to observe the eclipse directly when the sun's photosphere is completely covered. That means the visible part of the sun is completely covered by the moon, not before or after. So this gives us about 2 minutes when we can take the glasses off, look at the sun, and if we're fortunate, we'll see the corona. What's shown here is the corona stretching out beyond the sun. Actually, the sun is too dim to be seen through your filter glasses, as you probably imagine. And the faint corona will be visible. We don't see that normally because that light that's coming from the corona is overwhelmed by the light of the sun itself. We may see solar promises and possibly even a solar flare. So those 2 minutes could be quite interesting if you can really see distinctly what's going on. As I said, it occurs only briefly this time. Sometimes it's several minutes, but in this particular eclipse here in Oregon, it's going to be about 2 minutes. Now, one interesting scientific fact about this is, why do we even have this beautiful eclipse? And it turns out there's a great coincidence of the angular sizes of the moon and the sun from our vantage point that results in this total solar eclipse. Here's another animation showing that illustrates the fact that the moon just matches, from our vantage point, the size of the sun in the sky almost perfectly. Not exactly perfectly, because we do have these annular eclipses, and it depends on where we are in orbit and so forth. But it's quite an amazing thing that that's true. Again, this is not to scale, but in this case you see if you're directly under the darker region there, the size of that moon exactly blocks out the light from the sun. Now, in reality, the sun's distance is about 400 times the distance to the moon. We're about 93 million miles from the sun, and we're about 240,000 miles from the moon. So that's a factor of 400. And by a strange coincidence, the sun is about 400 times larger than the moon. So its diameter, which is shown here, is almost exactly 400 times larger than the diameter of the moon. So this is why this happens. It's an amazing coincidence, remarkable coincidence responsible for the total solar eclipse. Now, this coincidence has come about by an accident of nature, which we think we know a little bit about. So I thought you might be interested in knowing the history of how this came about. It's not, the details aren't really well known, but when the Earth formed 4.5 billion years ago, and the solar system was forming, other smaller planetary bodies were also growing. The solar system was full of lots of debris and various things that were there before 4.5 billion years ago. It's cleaned up a lot over time. The collisions and things have collapsed together and so forth. But there's scientific evidence that suggests that one of these other smaller bodies hit the Earth late in the Earth's growth process, blowing out rocky debris from the Earth. And we know that because we can compare the materials in the moon with the materials that are on the upper regions of the Earth. A fraction of that debris went into orbit around the Earth and aggregated into the moon. This was recognized several years ago, and there was a big article by the authors of this theory who put together the evidence once we had more information about the moon from the moon missions, and it showed up in this edition of the Natural History magazine. Planetary Science Institute did this. As time passed, the moon drifted to its current orbit. So all of this debris collected through gravity. I mean, gravity has a way of pulling things together. It formed the moon. The moon is less dense than the Earth overall, but it's similar density to the outer regions of the Earth. And it just drifted away from the Earth. And today it's in this current location where it has a perfect blockage of the sun's rays. But the moon is still drifting away from the Earth. We know the moon is drifting about 4 centimeters a year. So that's not much, about 1.5 inches a year. We can measure that by doing laser measurements and so forth. It's drifting slowly away from the Earth. It's continuing to drift away from the Earth. So you can do a calculation and ask, over time in the future, as it drifts away, it's going to fill a smaller and smaller portion of the sun. It takes about 100 million years at that rate to make a 1% difference on the total solar eclipse. So it's kind of an academic point. The solar eclipses will continue for a long time, but the moon is slowly filling a smaller and smaller portion, very slowly, of the sun. Now, as I was preparing this presentation, I thought about a few other scientific topics to bring into the discussion, and so I have a few here that are related to the eclipse and the sun and the moon. One is the corona, which we've already referred to, which can be observed and measured during the eclipse. Another is testing general relativity, where we can measure the bending of starlight. And then the third topic that I'd like to mention is just the neutrinos from the sun, which is a kind of a curiosity. So first of all, the corona. The corona is the solar atmosphere, and here you see another image that shows that solar atmosphere. And it's very hot. It's about a million Kelvin, or higher, actually, higher than a million Kelvin. The surface of the sun is about 6,000 Kelvin. Down at the core of the sun, we have about 15 million Kelvin. So it's not as hot as the core of the sun, but it's much, much hotter than the surface of the sun. But it's very diffuse. So although it's very hot and very bright, it's a very diffuse material. So there's not a lot of it out there. And therefore, until we block out the main light from the sun, we can't see it. But when you do block out the light from the sun, you can see it. And before the modern instrumentation was developed, the total solar eclipses were the best way of going and looking and studying that corona. Today, there are instruments that can actually go and block out that light and, you know, look at the corona and study it. But it's been historically, it's been one of the activities that people did around total solar eclipses. Another thing has been done is to test general relativity. Now, normally we think of light traveling in a straight line from one object to another. So here's the light from a star coming to the Earth. But what Einstein taught us was that actually, when you take light near a very massive object like the sun, the light that's represented by that solid yellow line there will actually be bent. Space is bent around the sun, and the light follows a path that's not a straight line. So in this particular case, we wouldn't be able to see that star because if the light went straight through the sun, but if it's bent around the sun, we can actually see that star. And the apparent position that we would think of the star as being at would be in that dashed line, because the light is coming into us along the line that heads out to that dashed line. So we would see the star in a different location than what it really is. Well, this theory was predicted by Einstein when he developed what's called the general theory of relativity, which is the theory of gravity that we have today. And this eminent physicist Arthur Eddington was the first person to really demonstrate that this effect was correct. And he did it in 1919 during a total solar eclipse, when he could actually see the stars near the sun. You can see the images of stars near the sun, and you can detect that they don't appear where they're supposed to be. You look at them in the sky when the sun's not there and figure out where they are. And then when the sun moves in front of them or near them, suddenly they appear to be in a different location. And Einstein's general theory of relativity predicted exactly how much of an effect there would be. And Eddington went off and made the measurements that demonstrated that Einstein was exactly correct. So this is one of the reasons Einstein is famous. That brings me to the final connection that I wanted to discuss, which is neutrinos. And this refers to the fact that energy in the sun results from thermonuclear reactions in which light elements, such as hydrogen, are fused into heavier elements, such as helium. And the temperature at the center of the sun, where these reactions are primarily at work, is, as I mentioned earlier, 15 million Kelvin, or about 27 million Fahrenheit. The power released by the sun is, 4 times 10 to the 26 watts. So that's the total power the sun is delivering all the time. If we could somehow bring the sun here and not eliminate our existence, we would have quite an energy source. But solar power is already doing us a lot of good. And that 10 to the 26 watts results in 1,400 watts incident for every square meter on Earth, which is why solar energy is so effective. Now, the nuclear reactions that we're talking about here are shown here. On the left side, we start out with hydrogen, four hydrogens. And on the right side, we end up with a helium, and there's a series of fusion processes that merge these elements together. And if you look very carefully, which I don't think you need to, but you'll see that there's some neutrinos being emitted along the way in those reactions. And the point is that almost all of the released energy comes out in thermal radiation, so that's heating up the sun. But a very small fraction of that energy that's released in those fusion reactions goes into the neutrinos. And the neutrinos, as soon as they're produced, they leave the sun. They pass right through the entire mass of the sun. They come to the Earth. Most of those neutrinos pass right through the Earth. The neutrinos don't respect matter. They just pass right through it. In fact, they can pass through like a light year of lead. They just go everywhere. But there's such an enormous number. Remember how much power there is in the sun. There's really an enormous number of these neutrinos. So even if we see just a very small fraction of them, we can actually make sense out of it. And this image here is an image of the sun made underground, deep underground, where neutrinos have come and been detected. And the people who made these measurements then traced the neutrino paths back and made an image of the sun. And I thought it was kind of fun to think about, even though this is a little bit far-fetched, what happens during an eclipse. Because during an eclipse, or before the eclipse, we have this visible light from the sun and we have this neutrino image underground. During the eclipse, the visible light is completely blocked out by the moon, but the neutrinos don't know the moon's there. They just pass right through the moon. So the image that we would get underground, of course, we're going underground too, and still pass through the surface of the moon, pass right through, and there's no effect on these neutrinos at all. There's a small effect, but it's practically, it is negligible. Of course, it takes much more than 2 minutes to actually make that image. That image is made over many weeks and months of measuring the few neutrino events that you get and then figuring out where they came from. So it's kind of a little bit of a fantasy, but it's kind of fun to think about. Okay, another connection to the solar eclipses is other solar eclipses. We can have, besides having solar eclipses where the moon blocks the sun, there was a solar eclipse observed by the Cassini satellite mission, which is currently in its final phases orbiting Saturn. If Cassini's been orbiting Saturn for many years, studying the moons and rings of Saturn, in September it's going to dive down into Saturn. It's right now, every week, it is passing between Saturn and the rings and studying those rings in a new way, and then we'll dive down. But in 2011, it observed Saturn blocking the light of the sun, and there's an image of that eclipse. And way back in 1969, the Apollo astronauts were returning to Earth from the moon, and they actually photographed the Earth blocking the sun's rays. So that was an Earth eclipse. So this is the image of the eclipse on 2011 of Saturn blocking the sun. So you can see this beautiful image. The sun is directly behind the planet of Saturn. The sunlight is nicely illuminating the rings of Saturn. It's a beautiful image that was taken by this Cassini spacecraft of that particular kind of exotic eclipse. And so it just shows you this eclipsing, and they had the lineup just perfect. So again, you had the right sizes matching things out. Their orbit had to be in the right distance from Saturn to make this match occur. And here's the image that was taken by the Apollo astronauts as they returned to Earth and observed the Earth blocking the the light from the sun, and you can see the diamond ring effect that we mentioned earlier. So that brings me to my conclusion. August 21st, 2017, will offer the residents and visitors to Oregon, and I think we all know there's going to be a lot of visitors here, a rare opportunity to experience one of nature's dramatic events. Care should be taken to safely observe the eclipse, and I think awareness is growing in that regard. Don't miss this one. Another total solar eclipse won't cross Oregon until 2169. Although a sliver of the Oregon coast, I don't believe Coos Bay is included, but farther up the coast, will experience a total eclipse in 2108. I don't have that one on my calendar. I'm not planning to take that one in. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. So, questions?
For our professor?
I really appreciate the fact that you gave me a lot of information that I hadn't thought about, so I really do appreciate that. And I've always wondered how the original testing of Einstein's theory of relativity was done, and I did remember reading about the solar eclipse back in 1918 and that was the first time they had an experience that they could actually document the differences, but I didn't understand it till that picture, so thank you for that.
Okay, I'm glad that helped.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And I hopefully I can share this with my kids and grandkids before
great.
The eclipse comes up.
Absolutely.
Pardon? And the video will be posted so people can see this experience as well, and I appreciate that. I do want to say to the League of Women Voters, and in particular our young woman in the back who had experienced ordering the regular glasses and got the free ones with her for the extras. And if you'd like an extra pair for somebody in the family, there's one also in the Travel Oregon book. So now you have two pairs. So
great.
The two of you can go. And I thank you also for reminding us that once the totality is there, you can take them off. Because if you think I can wait for a couple minutes and I'll take them off, that would be bad because then you would have missed the whole thing.
So that's right.
That's a good experience, a thing to remember too.
And look for those details in the
corona
and some of the flares that might show up. Just see if you see something.
Yeah, that would be special.
Right? Yeah.
And obviously the beads were named after a particular astronomer.
Yeah, that's right.
Pardon?
Mr. Bailey?
Yeah.
Mr. Bailey. We had a Bailey here not long ago. He's now up in Portland.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it was his family. So that was really interesting too. So thank you. And it worked out perfectly for our day because we have to go back to the session.
Yeah, I'm sorry you have to go back to work, but somebody has to do it.
Thank you for making the drive.
Okay.
It is really
important. Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed coming here and sharing with you all of this.
It's been interesting. My daughter's a playwright, and she read she's always liked science, so she read a Columbia University astrophysicist deal on, the idea that there are these other universes that are in competition from the Big Bang, and that there's
parallel universes,
yeah. And that they can actually collide and start the Big Bang all over again. So she wrote a play about that just because, and had a physicist come and tell her that's pretty close. You got
Mark Twain used the eclipse in his Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. I don't know if you ever saw the video or read. There's a movie starring Bing Crosby way back in the past. And, the gentleman from Connecticut who ends up back in King Arthur's era because he gets struck on the head and ends, thrown back in time, according to Mark Twain. He's in trouble, and he's trying to figure out a way out of it. And then he realizes that on that particular day when they were going to do him in, there was going to be a total eclipse. So he said, if you don't release me, I'm going to block out the sun. And sure enough, here comes the block, and he was a hero from then on.
it's amazing, and there's a lot of cultural conversations throughout history about these eclipses and
mm-hmm.
what they've meant
in
different societies. So,
and
the fact that it's still that way, and we're expecting a million guests to Oregon on that particular day, tells people that it is still a natural phenomenon that happens that excites a lot of people around the world. And do we know how many times it's gone through the state capitol?
how many times?
Yeah,
throughout those, history.
Yeah, or other state capitals. That was kind of interesting.
Well, it depends on how far back in history you go.
Obviously, wanna go?
But during the state, the time of the state, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. It's probably only a few times.
Yeah.
During the actual time of this of the existence
the
of the state. In fact,
yeah.
It may be two.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, or no, maybe, this,
maybe only one.
This may be the first one. I hadn't actually checked that. That's an interesting point. This may be the first total eclipse in the state capital during the history of Oregon. Yeah, that's probably true.
In
1979, was there a total eclipse?
There was a total eclipse.
I think so, because I lived here.
Okay. We thought we had a total eclipse down in Coos Bay at that time.
So there's the path of totality in 79.
It'd be close.
Yeah, it's Salem is in 79.
Yeah, yeah, that's impressive.
So okay. So it is the second one.
So two out of two in this century. That's amazing. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
And again, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so
for having me.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And I appreciate getting some of our great minds from our institutions to come to the Capitol from time to time and share with us their information. So thank you for spending your life doing this. And just hearing the conversation you did at the beginning of the different things you've been involved with, you've had an opportunity to be at the forefront of a lot of conversations about this kind of stuff. So that was interesting for me to have, too. So thank you for your contributions.
Thank you, Senator.
Yep. Okay, with that, we'll close our education committee for June 6th. For June 6th. We'll close our education committee.